When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Reunited, and it feels so good, Mr. David. How are you?
Morning, Mully. Yes, happy Thursday. Nice opening there, Brandon.
Yeah.
Back into the Chicago PD, Chicago Met, Chicago Fire state of mind.
Yeah, and I feel like I sound like a jerk there saying I want to challenge one of these guys to a trivia exam. The way I feel about it is I know a lot of police officers, you know, grew up with people who are on the force, et cetera. Yep. Got a great friend on the police force. And I just think that if you're, you know, the things that cops know, someone wrote a book about it. You definitely know where to go, where not to go, what to do, what not to do. And I would love to find out if any of the actors on those series are even aware
of
anything.
I really
Chicago.
Doubt it. The focus is on the drama, not the details.
Yeah.
And speaking of drama.
Yes, sir.
Little drama last night, White Sox style. Would you say it's dramatic, the move? Finally, because we were waiting for this one. Garrett Crochet finally traded. We say finally, and it could have gone longer. It could have dragged out.
Yes.
It could have gone over the winter through the holidays. Good for Chris Getz that he took the deal, built up a market, and I think the Red Sox were willing to make a deal, and the White Sox getting four prospects in return for Garrett Crochet, pretty good haul.
Yeah, you know, I'll explain it to you this way. No matter what deal he got, no matter what he did, I was never going to be over the moon about getting rid of a good young player who kind of proved himself a year ago. We thought, listen, you know, we don't know what Garrett Crochet will become, but his upside is pretty high, frankly. And so it's you know, now the Sox are in such a situation that they set a modern record for losses, even with him on that roster. So you got to take that into account. You got to understand 2 more years of control. Even if you were to extend him, what are you giving him? 3 years after that, tops? Are you going to pay the kind of money it would cost? I'm saying I still have to work out my sense of almost historical repetition.
I'm glad you started
the
déjà
vu.
There because
so I think
I'm glad you started there because I do think that this is a day where you're going to hear a lot of conversation about what the Sox got and how to project those prospects and how you look at and judge what Garrett Crochet is going to be versus what these prospects are going to be. But I do think that there's a difference between what we're asked to do in terms of evaluating the trade and celebrating the trade.
Right.
I do not think that if I were a White Sox fan that I would necessarily feel like celebrating. Because
You're kind of admitting you don't like the Sox.
No, I mean, I'm not.
That's how I took it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm trying to be objective about the Sox. You know,
no,
I always try.
You are objective.
But I think that this is not something that I would look at worthy of celebration. What you just acknowledged yesterday, last night, was baseball economics got the best of you.
Yeah.
You had to deal Garrett Crochet now rather than wait because you couldn't afford to keep him.
Yes.
And so you are now acknowledging where you are, which is at the very rock bottom organizationally, and you are trading Garrett Crochet because of that. Because an organization that really wanted to commit to winning would likely build around Garrett Crochet rather than use him for prospects to build around those guys.
And in fairness, when I evaluate the deal, they got 4 prospects. They got 4 of the top 15 players from the Red Sox. They, you know, the Red Sox have like Teal, the guy that was kind of the deal maker here, is a catcher, and he is a guy that is their 4th best prospect. They got a couple of like surefire guys ahead of him that they were never going to move, and I understand that. But you know, you also look at it and you say, okay, they got 2 hitting prospects that now fit in their minor league system that were not there before. They don't really have people like that in their minor league system, and they got 2 guys like that. They got a 3rd guy who might be able to play for them this year, an infielder.
Chase Madroff.
Who looks like a pretty good player. And then they got a pitcher with some interest to him. This is a hell of a lot better than what you managed in the Chris Sale deal those many years ago.
8.
But
8 years, almost to the day.
And yet, you can't help but feel that prospects are exactly that, prospects, and you gave more of a surety than you received back. Now, again, I think they got a pretty good haul from everything I've been reading. We'll talk to Jim Callis early in the program. Jim knows all these guys, has seen all these guys. He'll give us a better feel for it. I'm just being honest about, you know, I was never going to say, wow, they did it, great job. But they had a good winter's meeting, right? You finalize Tauchman in here. The Palatine Pounder is a professional baseball player, and you got him on a fairly reasonable deal.
A pittance.
That's
$2.9 million.
It's next to
or what's
nothing.
That, it was even one. That,
was it 1.9? Yeah, 1.95, I believe. To be technical, so you gave a couple
that's
million dollars
Soto
away.
Pocket change.
It's pocket change. You find that in the couch. But I think that when you think about the team they have, they added to it. They got the 1st pick of the Rule 5 draft. I don't know a lot about
Shane Smith, right-hander from the Brewers organization.
He's from the Brewers. I'm just saying, they got more players coming out of that thing than they had going.
When you look at apples to apples, if you want to compare this 8 years later to the Chris Sale trade, because it is the Red Sox, because the prospects coming in return, Michael Kopech and Yoan Moncada, at that time, we were talking about a quality prospects, 2 of the top in baseball coming to the White Sox. That to me was more of a quality versus quantity. This time you get 4 guys, 3 of them might be ready to contribute sooner rather than later. And you've got a very fascinating prospect, first-round draft pick in Braden Montgomery, who has yet to play an inning of professional baseball. You've got quantity here in terms of talent. And I think Chris Getz has to feel very good about the way, number one, he held on to Garrett Crochet at the deadline because of this possibility over the offseason to get more in return. And number two, I think that you feel like you were looking to replenish your system with positional talent, not just pitching talent.
And the Sox now have they had four, now they have six of the top 60 prospects in baseball. Now the Cubs blow everyone away, although the Cubs don't have six of the top 60, but they have eight
of the top 100. Use them now. But we'll get to that in a moment. You know, the way that the Sox built a market or waited for the market to build with Garrett Crochet, I think, is interesting because it made you feel like they had five teams legitimately interested.
Yes.
And you heard them rumored, and Chuck Garfine is in at the winter meetings, and he said, and he's as close to Getz as anybody, that was legitimate. They had five teams willing to make a deal. And when you have a market, you can ask for more, and you can ask for whatever you need to. You're not negotiating against yourself. And I think this looks like, on paper, according to industry people who evaluate this stuff, a pretty good trade for the White Sox.
And as we talked about in the pregame, you know, it does look good, and it does look like a good trade. You know, here's the problem is Jake Berger was also traded yesterday, and you got a hell of a lot more. You got three prospects for him when the Sox got a pitcher, a 26-year-old pitcher, who's like the Jake Eater is now like sixth or seventh on their list of left-handers.
That's Sox
left-handers.
Math. That doesn't add up.
Yeah,
that's not the kind of Sox math you like.
Now the people,
Jake Berger,
the people who did that were all fired.
That got them fired.
It doesn't. Yeah, that got
trading
them
Jake Berger got these guys fired.
Yeah,
that was the deal. That was the camel that broke the camel's back.
Right, because you had two guys working in different
with different agendas. And that's past history. But the Jake Berger trade is fascinating because he did go to the Marlins for Jake Eater, and then the Marlins use him for a season. He has a pretty good offensive year.
Yes.
Trade him to the Rangers for three prospects.
Yeah, I gotta ask Jim how good those prospects are. I got a feeling that three of them are better than Jake Eater.
Can I tell you what gave me a little pause in wanting to evaluate this closer with the deal with the Red Sox is that they are dealing with Craig Breslow. Now you remember Craig Breslow from the Cubs. This is somebody who was a very smart executive, very keen pitching eye for talent.
Yeah.
And I think that when you look at his willingness to give up what they gave up for a 25-year-old ace in Garrett Crochet, they've already dubbed him that. But you do worry White Sox perspective, you always worried if he was a ticking time bomb and the next time he took the mound, what injury might happen or occur. And I wonder about the health issue when you're talking about his long-term projection. You don't want to think that way.
I would legitimate concern. Here's the other thing, David. You know, when you talk about the timing, the fact that the Soto deal gets done for the amount of money it cost, and it exceeds the Ohtani deal, and you just thought that was never. You thought that might last 10 years because of the uniqueness of the player. So that one is erased, and then the Yankees are like sailors on shore leave, and they got money in their pocket, and they're like, "Well, we may as well get Max
Eight years
Reed.
For a left-handed pitcher
Eight
who's 30.
Years.
$218 million guaranteed.
That, by the way, is a ton of money, the most ever for a left-hander.
No,
and then
about
you
that.
And then you sit there and you say, "Well, there's a power left-hander available." I mean, how good is this?
That's
guy?
A great way to connect the dots because it's almost as if indirectly, Juan Soto going to the Mets triggered the White Sox deal with the Red Sox.
Isn't that strange?
Because the Yankees had to strike. And the way the Yankees responded to that was adding a left-handed pitcher. Well, look at the Red Sox in the same division. We can't let the Yankees do that. We need to strike ourselves. They think big. They aim high. They give up four prospects to the White Sox for Garrett Crochet, who is going to be their opening day starter.
And like I said, they kept their top three prospects, right?
Yeah.
So you got to keep that in mind. They gave up a lot, but they didn't give up the crown jewels, right? So, when you build up a good system, when you have a lot, you can make a lot of moves.
Right.
And I just hope that we feel good about this one. Eventually.
I think that eventually this, who knows, because how it will age. Here's what will age well, I think. Because of the way it's perceived, the reputation for Chris Getz has been enhanced already. And I think that he needed that.
Oh, he needs after the this. Trade deadline.
The credibility deficit that he was facing heading into this offseason was real. And I think this helps close the gap a little bit. It's not, he's got other moves to make, and there's a lot of other evaluations to make. But at least when you're talking about your most valuable asset, he comes out of this, I think, viewed as this is a pretty shrewd move, a pretty good one for the White Sox, given where they are in their development.
Yeah, I think it's hard to evaluate right now. They made the move. I think you got to live with it. I also believe that, he came out and he kind of talked about the idea that that they've accelerated the rebuild. Now, I'm not even sure that we knew the rebuild. They had admitted.
I wish you wouldn't have said
that. The rebuild was coming.
If I'm being honest.
He accelerated the rebuild.
I wish he wouldn't have said that. I'm glad that he did because it gives us a lot of things to talk about and certainly puts him on the record.
Totally puts him on the record.
But I wish he wouldn't have said that if I were him. Because what you do now is that you don't even want – you're not even at the point organizationally where you want to think about a timetable, where you want to get out a calendar, where you want to look at a clock because it's ticking. And you don't want to start that clock.
I was thinking last night as I was putting some questions in for our pick six, I was thinking like, well, I got too much Sox here. And then I thought, is this the only day of the year we're really going to talk Sox? How awful was that thought? That went through my head.
They still got Luis Robert Jr. to trade.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about it again.
The next
next best player.
By the way, speaking of things to talk about, imagine being in a market where this would be the second biggest story, but that's the reality in Boston today.
Yeah.
This is the second biggest story in Boston. The Red Sox make a big trade, but the Boston market is talking about Bill Belichick back in coaching.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
And we should, we announced later in the program that the Bears are not eliminated. Apparently, where there is life, there is hope. And there are some scenarios. I think it would take, a world disaster. But the Bears are technically not eliminated yet, but they will be maybe on Sunday. They probably don't even need a result on Monday. But I would agree with you when you say Mully. That's absolutely correct. No, that okay. is right. Right. That was a sternly voiced, you idiot. And I accept it because we know they're eliminated. But technically, Big Z tweeted out yesterday, just because he likes to correct us, that they are technically not eliminated.
I hope that was the last in the hunt graphic that we see.
That's it.
Because I'm done.
No, they're done. They're done. And they're done. Yeah.
And after the New England game, that was done, done.
I agree.
Done, done.
That's when Dustin declared they'd never win another game. And I really blame you, Dustin, for that, because they were really ready to turn it around.
I think Dustin deserves a prize for that take, because I think you took a lot of
first one
a
in
lot
a long time.
Yeah. You may have been right on that one. Yeah. I there's still 4 weeks left, buddy. I wouldn't be counting your chickens. They're still incubating.
Hey, this week, the road game's on Monday. It's not on Sunday. Yes. So maybe there's a chance. They had lost 20 consecutive Sunday road games.
That's correct.
Okay, so this is not, it's a Monday night game, in case you're not aware. The Bears aren't, Bears, everything's a big shakeup this week. So usually Tuesday's a day off. They did a little walkthrough yesterday. Guys were available via Zoom. Now today's the day off, and Brad told us that we won't get that first injury report until tomorrow.
That's right.
So, yep. There you go.
If they somehow pull off this win on the road on a Monday night, I mean, that would be classic to break, you know.
Here's the thing. Like, and I'm just going to say this because it's a strange thing to say, but I'll say it anyway. This is not an unfamiliar opponent. This is a team you played recently. This is a team you play twice a year. Mm-hmm. You should have enough knowledge of the opponent to be able to react as a coach, even if you're not the main guy, even if you're not that great a coach. You're familiar with the opponent. There's bad blood with anybody you have to play twice a year. You know your division. As much as we talk about how lopsided the nature of this thing was, when you really go back and think about the beginning of the year, how many people were on the Vikings? The Vikings had lost Kirk Cousins. They had brought in a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. I don't think anybody thought that Sam Darnold was going to play well enough that Sam Darnold is now, no question, a starting quarterback in the NFL. And he will start next year in the NFL, even if we don't know where, because it would appear that J.J. McCarthy will be back. And by the way, Daniel Jones is there. Not that he's staying. I'm just saying there are other possibilities. And I love J.J. McCarthy. I love the story. Local guy made good. But the fact is he's had two knee surgeries, not just one. They had to do a little cleanup operation. So we don't know. We don't know how that's going to work. But I would imagine that Darnold on a one-year $10 million deal is going to go somewhere in free agency.
I think the comp has been sort of like a Baker Mayfield resurgence. Someone is going to want him to be their starting quarterback. And the Vikings, I think it's a tough spot for them, because what is this trajectory for J.J. McCarthy, who, you know, is probably practicing in a limited capacity? Do you want to keep Sam Darnold around? I mean, and does Sam want to stay there
right
with Kevin O'Connell, who's going to be credited with this resurgence? Yep. So
QB whisperer.
It's going to be fascinating. I think the Daniel Jones situation is also really intriguing. Can Kevin O'Connell, you know, if J.J. McCarthy can't start next season at the beginning of the year, can Kevin O'Connell kind of help the Daniel Jones resurgence? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just, it's a really interesting, because if he's just going to churn out these, you know, washed up veteran quarterbacks and make them great again, I mean, Kevin O'Connell deserves all the praise.
And you know, he deserves all the praise for having Brian Flores there too, because there's a guy that, you think about it, like Danielle Hunter left in the offseason, and that looked like, oh, well, their pass rush just walked off, just went out the door. And they brought in veteran guys, and they've done a great job, and that guy really is a good defensive mind. I think that he's a very interesting guy too, as a potential candidate, although, as I said yesterday, I can't get my mind to buy the idea that the McCaskies are going to look at Roger and just kind of put a thumb to their nose and wave their fingers at him. Well, I think they follow whatever the league plan is, just out of habit.
It's not even Roger. It's the other owners.
Yeah, well, that's
right.
Yeah,
and that's the, like, the McCaskies to say, yes, we don't care that Brian Flores is suing all of us.
Yes.
I think that would be shocking. The one thing that would be interesting would be to see if he drops it, drops the lawsuit.
Doesn't he have two? I think he has two.
He's suing
Houston,
a few teams, and then he's also suing just the league in general.
Yes.
So listen, I'll say this on Brian Flores, and I've talked about him at length because I covered him for his last two seasons in Miami, back-to-back winning seasons for the first time in 20 years for the Dolphins. That, you want to talk about a football coach?
Oh, yeah.
And holding people, quote, the word that it's triggering for me right now to say the word accountable, but like Brian Flores, that is a no BS. This guy is coming in. He means business. And if you're messing around, Nate Davis, if you're messing around, I know he's not here. I'm just saying,
right,
for example, if you're messing around, Nate Davis, if you're not practicing hard, if you're messing around at the Hail Mary Tyreek Stevenson, that's someone that's not only going to make sure that you learn from that experience, but he's going to make you better from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, obviously, I know everyone wants to talk about what happened with Tua and that situation.
Especially Tua.
And Tua, move on, babes.
Yeah.
Like, it's all good.
He seriously doesn't like Brian Flores, and he's muddying the waters.
And you know what?
A
lot of people don't like playing for Brian Flores. Yeah. A lot of people don't like working for Brian Flores. It takes a very special sort of tough-minded person who wants to grind and wants to work hard, but also wants to win really badly. And when Kevin Warren Mully was sitting there and listing off the character traits of what they want in a head coach in that press conference, I'm just sitting there like, check.
Yeah,
check.
That's the guy that I described.
I personally loved covering Brian Flores. I got to know him a little bit outside of work. Tua called him a terrible person or a whore on the Dan Le Batard show.
Yep.
He is not a terrible person. I can promise you right now, he's not. And talking to people who are covering him in Minnesota, they love him. He's not a bad person. He's a wonderful man, and he's a really, really good football coach. I think that would be a really interesting person to bring in here and find out, what did you learn from that experience in Miami? What did you learn from Mike Tomlin a year under Mike Tomlin? What have you learned from Kevin O'Connell? How are you going to organize your offensive staff to get the best out of the quarterback? I think, listen, I will stand on the rooftops. Brian Flores, come to Chicago, baby. I would love it. I would love it.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, frankly, because I think he's a really good football coach. And I think that, and we'll get into this, I think we'll talk about it in the pick six. I think the culture problem with the Chicago Bears, mm-hmm. they brag about their culture and they have for years. That guy is a culture builder. That guy knows how to organize discipline of football team.
Mm-hmm.
So these pre-snap penalties and all these things, that would be long gone when you had someone like that. And Vrabel's kind of the same way. But those are the only like veteran coaches out there that you really would think about. And I think they really need to think about it. And I got a hard time imagining, you know, the Bears being able to go out and pull the trigger on that, given some of the personal history stuff against the league. And actually, when you really think about it, that Tua stuff doesn't help either, because what you need from a coach is you need somebody to work with a quarterback. And, you know, it's a problem that he would have to explain. And, you know, whenever you talk about defensive coaches, what's the first question? Who's your offense coordinator?
100%.
Who are you bringing with you? Who is it that you're going to put this on, and how are you going to handle this? And are you going to have a good relationship with our quarterback?
100%.
You'd have to get comfortable. You'd have to get past all that stuff in order to hire him.
Can I share a personal experience?
Please.
After the Minnesota game that was here, I had a chance to say hi to Brian Flores. Obviously covered him, got to know him in Miami. I had a chance to say hi to him. We were chatting after the game, and the Vikings players were walking to the bus.
Yeah.
And Sam Darnold is walking by. Brian Flores walks away from the conversation I was having with him. He goes, one sec. Walks over to Sam Darnold, gives him a huge hug. He came back. They chat for a second, came back over to me, and he goes, I always tell Sam, I'm always going to get you the ball back.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's
I'm always going to get you the ball back. I'm always going to give you another shot.
Yeah, that's good.
And you know what? To me, it was cool to kind of witness that personal experience.
Good.
Because after, you know, the one-sided story that we've gotten from Miami, right? Like, let's remember that's a one-sided story that we've gotten because Brian Flores is never going to throw Tua under the bus.
No.
But he probably could.
You know, but he hasn't talked about it at all.
And he won't.
Yeah, he's taking the high road.
He's taking the high road.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see the way that his players, when he was defending that situation, his players are standing on both sides of him, you know, sort of backing him. And listen, you can call me Ruthie Brian Flores Polinsky. Okay.
Wow, look at you.
I'm just a big fan of that guy.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we talked about it before the Detroit game that really, in a weird way, that was a job interview for Ben Johnson. I think that's the way you have to look at coaches that you're facing the rest of the way, because it's really not about this season anymore for the Bears. It's about the future, which is why preserve the quarterback, please, and let's make sure there is a future. But I think that, you know, an astute fan will keep an eye on their defense and see what they're doing and see what that matchup is like, because there's another guy that is out there that is different because he has experience. You know, you need people to have been through something before.
Yeah.
We have seen the long line of assistants that have been hired here and how that tends to go. So it would be, you know, they did it with John Fox, but Foxy by that time was on the back end. And
you love the Foxy, the Flucy.
The Flucy I didn't create. I don't think Foxy was
who,
mine.
David did Flucy?
No, whoever did Flucy. Flucy was Flucy when he got here. That's I do enjoy a good nickname if it's solid. You know, I mean, I had a buddy and his family. He was like dark Irish and his family had a brother, an older brother who was blonde and the rest of them were all dark haired. They called him the Swede. And every time I heard that reference, I would laugh because he wasn't actually Swedish, but he looked more Swedish than the rest of them. I love like an appropriate nickname. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with
you and Flucy both love a nickname.
Yeah. Flucy was a little too, you know, I hope I'm not being disrespectful to him.
No.
By calling him Flucy.
I
found it kind of charming.
I think Flucy encapsulates who he is as a man. And it's a wonderful person that you want to like bring into your home and like have a nickname for him. Like he's a nice man.
It was implied to me that it's disrespectful to not call a guy coach. Coach Eberflus or whatever. And it was implied that when the players refer to him that way, it showed a lack of respect. So I was in a way encouraging that. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but
yeah, I know, for example, in other places, like I think the coaches like to be sort of, maybe in this day and age, maybe that's more of an old school, but like Flo loved to be called Flo. Or Coach Flo.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Could Coach you imagine Flo. If we went from Floose to Flo?
No, I don't think I could handle that.
That's a lot.
Chris, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Yeah, we're watching all your moves with great interest. It is it's a lot of fun to see the, you know, we love the managerial search and the hire and you've got a lot of interesting people joining the organization. We understand there's a lot of people that know a lot about the game, a lot of bright people that you guys are bringing in, and it's fun to see an influx of players. You know, I grew up a Sox fan, and I love the team. Obviously, a rough year last year, but it's always tough to see somebody leave the organization, but you do feel like you got a pretty good return with now, I believe it is four of your top 14 prospects overall, according to MLB.com, came in that deal. So That is not just the two top end guys, elite hitters in both their rights, but also you've got players galore. You got four bites at the apple there, and that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, no, thanks for saying all that. And listen, you know, it takes time. You know, a year ago I was talking about all these different ideas, and now, you know, you talk about Will Venable and others in the front office that have come aboard along with coaches and you know, even some free agents, where now we can actually point to some things and while they're around us and see us work together. And, you know, it's much more tangible, you know, from where we were a year ago. But, you know, when you make a decision like moving on from Garrett Crochet, certainly never easy. We're talking about a guy that Arrow, you know, certainly seems to be pointing up, one of the frontline guys, and certainly from a trade standpoint, top of the list for a lot of organizations. But you rewind back where we were a year ago with Garrett Crochet too, right? I mean, a guy that obviously very talented, had some injuries, you know, reliever, and then, you know, we put him as the opening day starter last year, and that's a testament to the last offseason for him and the commitment. You know, the silver lining with a club like ours last year is we were going to be able to provide a runway, and he certainly took advantage of that. And, you know, when you make a move like this, you know, it certainly can change the course of the future. I mean, man, we feel really good about this return. And you know, I think what really led to us getting more comfortable as we're staring at names and doing all this research, we spent so much time on Braden Montgomery because he was the 2024 first round pick. He was we considered him in number five. Year prior, Kyle Teal, another first round pick. We spent a lot of time, you know, on him and with him. So from a talent and character standpoint, if you're going to rebuild an organization, really, you know, inject foundational pieces, I mean, gosh, the comfort level knowing that you know, we've been really doing deep dives on those individuals, it just really helped lead to a decision. And then to be able to fill it out, Chase Mydrop, one of the better, you know, minor league performers in baseball, kind of just quietly you look up and it continues to do it analytically, very strong both defensively and offensively. You look at his on-base numbers and they're absolutely through the roof, but there's versatility and just basketball skills. So we like that. We need that. And then Wilkerman Gonzalez is a guy that we've been talking about for years and potential deals. It's a big arm. We like this stuff. He's got starter potential and certainly, you know, could land, be an impactful arm in the bullpen someday too, after we exhaust the starting front. So, yeah, I mean, it's a diversified package. Three out of the four pitched or played in the upper double A or above, and you got an advanced college bat in Braden Montgomery. So, yeah, we're in a much better place than we were a couple days ago. And, yeah, I mean, it's a momentum builder. You know, the feedback from around the industry has been really positive. And, you know, now it's a matter of developing these guys and having them enter into the major league, under the major league club at the appropriate time and support these guys the best we can.
There seems to be a consensus that you did get quality in terms of the return, Chris, and we heard you say that it accelerated the process. I'm curious how much that would be the case, especially when you talk about two guys specifically. Kyle Teal sounds like, you know, he might be ready to break camp with a major league club if he has a good spring training. I think you mentioned Mydroth, and some people have referred to him as the, you know, second baseman for 2025. Is that too accelerated? What are the expectations for those two guys specifically in terms of making this team out of Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mydroth for one. I mean, he had a full season at AAA, so, and he's touched a lot of spots, a lot of the steps along the way at the minor league level, and he's been very consistent. And you look at those types of offensive profiles historically, you know, he's well positioned. So, you know, we look forward to being around him in spring training. He'll definitely get a chance to crack our major league club. Kyle Teal, you know, he's got some time at AAA, you know, college kid, left-handed bat, you know, smart kid, makeup kid, you know, and has performed. So, you know, I
yeah, candidly, I think he'll get a chance out of spring training too. If you know, there's other variables as well. You got Edgar Caro that is upper level, so we feel really good about the catching position. So yeah, I mean, you know, when you make these, you're looking at potential deals. You don't want to get too caught up with proximity, especially, you know, when you're talking about a Garrett Crochet and this opportunity to inject real high ceiling talent. It just so happens these guys, you know, were so many of them were double A above, two at triple A knocking on the door. So, you know, it's really exciting on a lot of different levels. But yeah, these guys aren't far off. And then you go into the Colson Montgomerys and some of these other players and pitchers that we feel really good about. It's starting to take shape. It is. You can't rush these things. You don't want to force it. You know, even though it's as painful as you know, we all, you know, just enduring last year. I mean, it was really tough. But if we want to get this right, we've got to be patient. We've got to be really sound in decision making and make sure these guys are ready. And we're just fortunate here that they're getting a lot closer. So it's exciting. It's an exciting time with the White Sox.
Chris, we talked to Jim Callis yesterday just about the prospects. He obviously does a great job digging through the background of all these guys, and he's seen them all play and everything. He told us that he believes you have the best collection of young catchers in Major League Baseball. And obviously you mentioned two of them there, Kyle Teal and of course, Edgar Cuero. And, you know, it was wild because you kind of said at the winter meeting that Cuero would have a chance to make the roster. He's a year younger than Teal. He's a Cuban player, so he's probably been playing longer. But, I you know, I don't know that. But I'm just curious, were you hesitant about getting another catcher because you had Cuero? Or do you need – this is an elite hitter. He's an elite hitter, too. Do you need as many bats? And, you know, I know Teal's a lefty and Cuero's a switch hitter. Was there any hesitation about the fact that they play the same position, or do you like having a pair of young catchers?
I mean, I love having a pair of young catchers. I mean, I do. It's obviously such a vital position for a club. And, you know, what gets lost is, you know, the handling of the impact that it has on just a pitching staff, a game plan. You know, it just really, you know, infiltrates a clubhouse when the catching position is right or wrong. So, you know, I don't think you can have enough, you know, talented catching. Now, with that being said, you got to diversify your roster and you want to balance it. Now, what I will say, just, you know, and this has been going on for a while, but certainly felt it, you know, this winter is the market for catching. I mean, it is absolute gold. I mean, teams are they're desperate for it. You look at, you know, some of the free agent contracts and the willingness to you know, really seek young catchers because it's such a difficult position to find and to fill. So, you know, I feel very fortunate to have, you know, three really quality guys, because Corey Lee's a young catcher in this game that can really catch and throw, and you know, had, you know, spurts of being an up and coming, you know, everyday catcher type. So, you know, I don't want to scoff at what he's capable of doing. So, it's about injecting talent when you're in a rebuild. And, you know, Kyle Teal, left-handed bat, has been very productive. We liked his well-rounded offensive skill set. You know, he's tremendous athlete. I mean, he played outfield at UVA. He can play infield. We love him as a catcher, but there's real versatility there as well, which is a big benefit. Edgar Caro, you know, he right now he's stronger on the right side. So, you know, and he's still pretty good from the left side too. So, you know, that combo is really strong. There's versatility. It gives us a lot of options to improve our roster. It's one of those, like, I'm not going to get too caught up in the fact that we feel really good about Edgar and Corey. Kyle Teal's an upcoming top catcher in our game, top just overall player. So, let's get him in the system, see where it goes. More than anywhere, a lot better, not only at that position, but organizationally after a move, like moving Garrett Crochet with the return that we received.
Chris, people have a good understanding of where the White Sox are, and you've been pretty transparent of understanding how big the job is. Question, we were debating this morning with Luis Robert Jr. What's the play here? While you're on a roll, do you want to continue to take trade offers for him and consider unloading him now? Do you want him to rehabilitate or repair his swing? So with Ryan Fuller, the new director of hitting, so maybe by the deadline you get better offers? Or do you repair his swing, get him to the back to being the player he was, and extend his contract and make him a foundational piece? A lot of options with Luis Robert Jr. How should we look at it?
Yeah, I mean, you described it great right there, and that's why you got to be so careful with a player like Louis. You know, a year ago, coming off of his 2023 season, I mean, gosh, it was close to a 4-5 win player he was, and it was like, all right, are we just scratching the surface here? Unfortunately, you know, he got hurt the second week of the season because he's had a really solid spring training. He looked pretty good the first week in a multi-home run game. You know, he was spitting on pitches and having good at-bats, and unfortunately, had the hip flexor, injury that took him out for several months. And when he came back, you know, Louis, it was just playing catch-up, and he was putting so much pressure on himself to perform and make up for lost time, and it just snowballs. Baseball's too hard of a game to put undue pressure. But if you smooth out the front end of the year, be really intentional about, all right, we're looking at, you know, a full season here. And, you know, at its floor, just because of the defense and the base running and the power, you know, we're talking about an above average major league player. And that's without really even tapping into the bat consistently. And if he gets a smooth runway with the bat, it's like, all right, now we're kind of back to being that 4-5 win player, if not more. So, wow. Yeah, I mean, we got to get it right in the front end, and that's what makes him attractive to other clubs. But you want to make sure you're going about it the right way in terms of capturing, you know, not value for Louis, you know, like because he, if it makes sense to move him, you do it, but you don't just do it for the sake of doing it because we're talking about a tremendous talent.
And not only did you get the four young guys, you got Mike Tauchman. We certainly watched him play with the Cubs. The Palatine Pounder, good that he's staying in town, and you brought in you had the first pick of the Rule 5 draft, and you brought in Shane Smith from Milwaukee. So now he'll be on the roster. Is he a starter? Is he a bullpen piece? Where are you at with those guys?
Well, Tauchman, you know, we're talking about a guy that talking about putting together an at bat, grinder. A guy that Chicago's already, witnessed what he's capable of doing because he's the local kid, but also did well with the Cubs very recently. You know, left-handed bat, can play all three. It was just, all right, we got a really mature approach, to the game, but in the box. It's like, we could use that. You know, we could obviously use that. So excited. And he wanted to come here, which is, certainly nice to hear. And then, yes, Shane Smith, first pick in the Rule 5 draft. You know, our bench coach now, Walker McKinven, he's a guy that was in Milwaukee for a stretch of years, and so he has familiarity with Shane. With these selections, right, or when you have to make any of these acquisitions, it's rarely a consensus, with your group. You know, there's so many different ways to analyze any acquisition, potential acquisition. And it was a consensus for Shane to select him, whether it be Brian Bannister, just our R&D crew, our scouts, and certainly Walker with some familiarity. So we see him as a guy that certainly can start for us, but he also, there's versatility in there. And when you're talking about a Rule 5 pick and, these guys that, when you take them, it can be difficult to navigate a year for a young player that, sometimes hasn't even pitched to AAA. So the ability to go to the bullpen, make some starts, that could be really valuable in just navigating the year then to become kind of a normal rostered player the following year. But he's a guy that can make starts for us. And, we want to protect a lot of these young pitchers, certainly protect Shane as well, as these guys kind of enter their first time at the major league level or second year, that's really important for us. So Shane, we're happy to add him to the group.
So Chris, earlier in the show, Mully put me on the spot to come up with an impromptu White Sox lineup. It included two guys that I wonder what you think about their chances are of being in that lineup, maybe opening day. Colson Montgomery, I had at shortstop. And Miguel Vargas, who struggled mightily last year coming over from the Dodgers at third base. Are those two guys part of the immediate plan in 2025?
Gosh, I hope so. You know, I say that, you know, Colson, you know, you look at the year last year, you know, he you look up and it was like, all right, his surface level numbers were different than what he had seen in the past. But the underlying was still pretty solid. And in the last 2 months, you know, he made some adjustments. There was freedom in the swing. There was aggression. And now we're like, okay, there we go. So he finished pretty strong at AAA. Goes to the fall league, continued that. It was really about creating some momentum going into 2025 season. And I've told Colson, you know, and others that, you know, this kid, you know, he comes in and he's doing what he did at the end of last year. You know, he's on the 40-man roster now. Yeah, I'm getting very comfortable with him potentially being on that opening day roster. Miguel Vargas comes over to trade. Historically, guy, you look through his minor league career, he's been a performer. He's done it even at the major league level. And, you know, came over here. He looked good defensively at third, which was great. Offensively, you know, he just never got going. And he didn't, you know, he's a guy that needed to add some strength. I think by the time we acquired him, he was just worn down. And then you've got the transition coming over in a trade in season. He'd been with LA, you know, for his entire career. He's really focused on just getting stronger so he can make adjustments and really, you know, impact the baseball in the box. That's been the focus. Obviously, you bring in Orion Fuller and, you know, you look for ways to provide the support that these hitters need, and Miguel in particular, because he does have some real offensive potential that can help us. So I think both those guys have a good chance. And whether we talk about some of the recent acquisitions in this trade, along with some others, you know, whether they're opening day, I know there's a tremendous, you know, focus and attention and sometimes obsession. And I tell players this all the time, you know, everyone gets caught up in making the opening day roster, and then, you know, day two, you know, you may not make the club, and then day two, you're on the club. So let's not, it's all about getting through, you know, get a bulk of that year in 2025 on that roster and being productive and getting your career going.
Chris, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. Just on the way out, you got to get what? This year's Eric Fetty. You got to make sure you get more players with a little history. How much more work is there to be done? You got plenty of time.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. I'd love to be able to find an Eric Fetty. yeah, no question about it. Those don't necessarily come every off season. but we're on the hunt. We're ready to pounce. You know, the beauty of doing a move like this, you know, let's say early in the off season, but earlier in the off season you position yourself to be a little bit more precise and understanding what your needs are. And the pool of players a greater pool of players are out there right now than there will be when you're knocking on the door of spring training. So a lot of work to be done. We've got a great group that helped me on the acquisition front. And, you know, we're ready to work and get things going.
Great stuff, Chris. Thanks a ton.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
That is Chris Getz.
I don't know if Thomas said like this, but we got our ass kicked today.
He said it similarly. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. That was Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
And he went a little darker on it than, but he said ass.
And never would have made the Hard Knocks cut.
No, that one won't.
Maybe not.
On the cutting room floor.
It really was a long day, and it really poses some difficult questions, and they're not easy to answer because the answers don't come immediately. This is a long-term project. And it's the Bears are further away than we anticipated. Maybe we were all deluded into thinking things were possible that aren't. But when we started the season, I thought we agreed this was a winning team, meaning winning more than you lose, and they were on the verge of playoff contention. Here they are now in the midst of a 7-game losing streak, Mully, and I don't know that they're definitely not a winning team, and I question how far away they are from playoff contention. It's more than just a one-season, one-off-season maybe rebuild. Tweak, fix. I don't think in the NFL you can ever rule that out, but it looks like it's more acute. The problems, the offensive line's a mess. the defensive line is going to have issues. And if you can't win the line of scrimmage battle, you're not going to win many games.
Yeah, yeah. I like the way Olin put it. They built a 7-on-7 team. They really have. And you know, that looks great when you're running a 7-on-7 drill. That really does look good. The problem is, what happens when you start filling in the line of scrimmage? Well, for the Bears, it goes the wrong way.
It just isn't syncing up at the right time. The Bears, for years, had this defense that they could count on and an offense that you couldn't. But, you know, it was competitive because they were defensively going to limit teams. Now it feels like the defense is regressing. The offense is still not where it needs to be. But what do you count on going into an offseason? Can you count on a defense? It's going to be a different scheme, presumably. You're going to have a different coaching staff. You're going to have a different everything. You might have a different roster in terms of the overall if Ryan Poles doesn't survive this. And after yesterday, I don't know that anything can be ruled out.
Even if he does, don't you need like 15 new players that can actually contribute? I'm not saying, you know, you're going to draft 10 guys. No, I'm just saying. But you need, like, you've already cut one of your offensive linemen, right? Nate Davis.
Mm-hmm.
You need to fill in that position. You went out, you traded a draft pick for Ryan Bates, and he's still not back yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we're going to have a conclusion on him before the end of the season.
Another sunk cost.
Yeah, but I'm saying you're going to need to figure out whether you can get him to play, whether you can get him to play center. You know, I think that I'm not blaming Coleman Shelton. I thought he played better as the year went on, but you're going to need an upgrade in terms of your starting center.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you start. Is Tevin Jenkins on this team next year? You're not going to give him another contract if he's been, you know, as kind of in and out of the lineup as he has.
Moving on.
But, yeah, and Olin is right. You know, you can't come out and you can't say, oh, yeah, everybody really is relieved. I forget, the latter is all he said, because Potsy asked him a question, which was basically.
He said it's difficult, but, yeah. You
don't want to badmouth this guy.
Right.
But, you know, everyone's feeling good about the change, and he. And again, he was the guy playing Rock'em Robots with the bad penalty at the end of that game that led to the final sack.
No doubt.
Which was on
offensive
line
has got to be made over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the offensive line is in the terms of makeover.
That's a lot of makeover.
Any new coach, though, any new general manager, they will look at the roster and say, well, we have the toughest question answered.
The quarterback.
Yes. So I think that is enticing, but it's also got to be with the understanding that so much more is needed and the defense isn't going to stay together forever.
You're not bringing back two of your three tight ends. You're not bringing back a wide receiver, one of your three wide receivers. I don't know where they are with Tyler Scott. Do you need to upgrade that? Exactly.
He hasn't really contributed.
He hasn't even been involved. You know, do they need more speed and a deep threat? You know, you still got DJ. You still got Roma Dunze, those guys are going to be here for a while. I'm just saying there are a lot of positions that are going to have to be redone.
Yes, and you look at the offensive line, you start there, you draft there, you go to free agency, and that's your priority.
Then
your defensive line is your second priority. You've got to start building from the ball on out, and
no
they
doubt.
Have not done that in recent years, and they're paying the price now because this season got away from them in a hurry, and now it doesn't look like they have another win on the schedule.
312-644-6767. Let's try David. David's in Woodridge. Hey, David.
Hey, guys. I got to tell you, the biggest disappointment that I saw yesterday was an absolutely pathetic performance from the defense. Eric Washington, and what I was thinking early on is that if you are a top quality defensive head coach or coach, you're not going to work second banana behind a head coach who's a defensive minded guy. He looked like another guy that had the deer in the headlights. Kittle going free all day, didn't do anything to change that. That soft cover two zone defense, the San Francisco picked him apart all day. And from a team that was screaming that the head coach had to go, I thought that was an absolutely miserable poor, pathetic, soft performance from a defense that was supposed to be the backbone of your team.
David, yeah, that's fair.
Thanks for the phone call. That was the worst thing about yesterday.
Yeah, it was. That's a fair comment.
The defense,
yeah,
falling as short as they did, and looking as overmatched and dominated as they were, the defense, the thing that you could count on the most, gave you the least.
Bobby's on the road. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, guys. How we doing?
Good. Living the dream, man.
Yeah, living the dream, aren't we?
Sadly, we have to keep watching this, though.
Watching the nightmare. Living the dream, watching the nightmare.
I turned on the Bills and the Rams in the middle of the game, and I watched two quarterbacks just whipping it around. Man, that was exciting stuff. Anyway, how many times in the last year on this station have we heard that all we need is the quarterback, right? I mean, probably over 100. Hundreds of times we've heard that. So we just played an organization that is concerned about the quarterback, but more concerned about putting a 53-man roster together that is capable of winning football games. And then you have another organization that has been told over and over that the quarterback is all we need to cover all the warts. Well, guess what? It's not true. The Bears are the single most disrespectful, entitled NFL locker room I've ever seen in my life. These dudes have never won anything in their life. Like, what are we talking about? How many of the captain crew or whatever the hell we're calling them and the starters took off last Wednesday? They're on a six-game losing streak. They're taking practice off? What the hell are you talking about? The coaches don't do anything about it? Dude, I've had people on the phone, man. If you don't get here in 15 minutes, you're not playing Sunday. It's simple, man. There's no reason that you're playing Sunday and not practicing Wednesday when you're on a six-game losing streak, sitting there talking crap about all the coaches and everything else that everything done, right? I'm going to leave it with this, right? The reason I love football is because it kind of condenses life into 17 weeks, right? A lot of stuff's going to happen that's out of your control. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. When it's bad, losers whine about what other people didn't do. Winners shut their mouth and get to work. What kind of a team do you think we have?
It's a really good phone call. I think there's a lot of truth to what you say. I think that when the Bears went out and they had this great defense and they went out and got Jay Cutler and they brought in the quarterback and everyone thought, here it is. This is now a Super Bowl team. And then they realized, oh, you know, he needs a left tackle. Well, you know, he needs a receiver. And next thing you know, you're now an offensive-minded team. You're putting all your resources into the offense. And you're not winning. And your defense goes down.
I know.
It's a classic kind of error that you can make. You need a complete football team. And unfortunately, the Bears are woefully lacking in that area. You know, we talked about Andrew Billings. When that guy went down, a lot of good things that defense was doing went with him. And he was the only guy on the roster that could do the things that he can do. And, you know, I don't know that they've ever replaced that. Now, you know, here's a guy that will be back next year and he's still under contract, et cetera. You will improve that way. Montez Sweat, they go out and they trade for him. They give him a $99 million contract, $100 million investment in a guy, and he's gotten worse. I mean, his numbers are terrible. Looked like he had a sack and then he lost it, but he's got – how many sacks? Two sacks on the year? It's crazy.
Not as many as Aiden Hutchinson.
Wow, that's insane.
But I think that your point's well taken. My thing about the defense, Andrew Billings, that was an injury and that hurt because he was indispensable.
Yeah, he was.
I think the bigger problem with the Bears may be not that they didn't have an adequate replacement for him, because these things happen and you can't really – that's just bad luck. But going into this season, they really never replaced Justin Jones.
No,
they were relying
on guys to step up and fill in that role. They had drafted guys, and they were waiting on them.
Fair enough, but the point being that when you looked at this roster being supplemented with depth pieces, the kind of that you know you're going to need, because as a 49ers example yesterday, attrition will strike.
Oh, yeah.
And it will hit you hard sometimes. You've got to be ready for that. You can never have enough on defense, cornerbacks or defensive tackles.
That's right.
And the Bears went into this season probably one defensive tackle shy of having what you would really want to have an elite defense. So that's on the front office, I believe. Injuries happen. Offensively, on the offensive line, same idea. Nate Davis was a sunk cost. Why?
Yeah, it's crazy.
That was a big miss. Ryan Bates, same idea. If those two guys, by design, are functioning the way that you thought they would when you signed them, then we don't have this big problem. So you're making decisions and you're making moves, but you're making the wrong decisions and the wrong moves.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a major issue, and you've got, you know, support play. Don't even get me going.
From top down, Kevin Warren included, who was doing well at their job? Kevin was brought here to deal with the stadium, right? Is that going well? It doesn't seem like it. I don't know Chicago politics and the money and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't seem like anybody from the top all the way down is doing well.
So, who's doing a good job at Halas Hall?
I think I'm going to get chastised for this, and I don't want anyone... I can't see the text line, so don't text at me. But I think Ryan Poles is doing a good job. I think he got the quarterback. He lucked into a lot of it. He's made some mistakes. He's owned up to those mistakes in terms of personnel and coaching decisions and hiring decisions. And I am intrigued to see how he corrects the head coach decision. I think he's doing a good job. And I think he's, as Kevin Warren reminded us, he's young. He's a young GM. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to learn. And I'm excited to see how he continues to grow. The Kevin Warren comment about the stadium, I think, is fascinating, because if Kevin Warren is going to have a major part in this head coaching search, which we've all kind of alluded, been led to believe, that's a full-time job. You can't, you know, put half effort into this coaching search. That's a full-time job. So then who's doing the stadium? Because it's not why you came here. So I'm just curious to see how that kind of plays out.
I'd give Ryan Poles an all right. I'd give him an all right on it. I just, you know, the hardest one is it's going to be really hard to make this roster comment, kind of like we're going to take the North and never give it back. Mm-hmm. You know, these are standalone items that don't look very good right now. Okay. But I had a problem with this when they brought the guy in. You know, as soon as Kevin Warren got involved in making football decisions that don't necessarily have an impact on the stadium. This one might, though, if you think about it. We don't have a lot of time in this segment. I just don't want Kevin Warren making too many football decisions.
That's fair. Tory Taylor's doing all right. I know that's a terrible thing to say, but as a man that demanded they draft a punter, and as a man that celebrated and felt as if I had won a championship myself when they drafted the punter from Iowa, who was like one of my favorite players
Same
in that draft.
Ever.
I was delighted, and I am delighted, and I think he might be having the best season out of any player on the team, which, again, you know, it's interesting to have Patrick Manley be the guy to point this question out, because many years, Pat was the best player on the team. The problem was, as I wrote one time, and he jokes with me about, you can't ride the long snapper to a Super Bowl. But he was the best long snapper in the league for many years, and was a guy that was having these like perfect seasons that no one was picking up on. Just
who drafted Tory Taylor?
That would be Ryan Poles.
Thank you very much.
You're making your point. Yeah, I'm with you. All right, we got to get to Joe Ostrowski. We'll talk to Joe next. Get your wagertainments for the weekend. It's Mully and Haw, and we have Ruthie Polinsky in again this morning on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Money, 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 money.
Mully and Haw, Ruthie Polinsky in this morning, and we've got Joe Ostrowski now joining us on the Score Hotline, the Aturo Hotline, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Joseph, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Hi, Joe.
Good morning, Mully and Ruthie. Just Bears. Making me look stupid. All of us look stupid. Themselves look stupid. Week after week, silly me. I will only talk about the fired coach bump with other teams. That's something that I always forget. Like the rules are different with this team. We all know that.
Well, I mean, are they going to win another game? Will you find yourself wagering upon them again, Joe? Or will you instead choose to, I don't know, make a wager that they lose out?
I don't know that anybody's going to be able to say on Monday, I'm betting on the Bears. which probably means that you should bet on the Bears because they show up when you least expect them to, and they're a complete no-show when you expect them to actually fight. But I was curious about this because I know you guys have been talking a lot about this, and with the tough schedule that they, of course, have, we've been looking at Seattle. Like, that's the one game that a lot of people look at. So I was curious what the win total is sitting here 4-9. They have the updated win total at 5.5 juice to the under. So the betting market is basically saying, all right, we think the Bears will win one more game. It's just good luck figuring out what that game is, because that game that was circled that most people figured, okay, Seattle would be the game. Don't look now, but since they're bye, they've won 4 straight games. Mike McDonald making changes on defense. He's figured things out. Over the last month, they're only giving up 15 points per game. So, yeah, I would agree with you guys right now that probably not, even though the number's 5.5 for wins.
They could maybe get the Lions at home after they played them close. Lions start resting people. I don't know.
Yeah, that number's 7.5 for next week, Ruthie.
Ugh, okay, well, talk to us about the one that's coming up Monday night. Bears-Vikings, what are the props looking like?
Yeah, you guys hit on it. The Vikings are so much more interesting to talk about. Kevin O'Connell, you know, he's the second favorite now for the coach of the year, and of course Flores. But I look to the guys that got him in the last matchup, and it's where the Bears have struggled mightily on defense with or without Eberflus, stopping that run game. Aaron Jones was over 100 yards last time against them. His early number is 61.5. You'd assume he'd continue to run. Oh, I think we've seen him have a couple good games against the Bears in the past. And then the tight end position, Hockenson, he went for over 100, and we saw what Kittle's done and a number of tight ends this season. That number is only 39.5 receiving yards. So as far as how I'm going to attack it, I'll be looking at Aaron Jones and Hockenson.
All right. Why are people betting Notre Dame to win the national championship? Is that insane?
If you look at the path, I don't think it's insane. It is a year where there isn't one great team that stands above the rest. And if you look at the odds, the favorites to win the titles of the top four, three are on the top half of the bracket: Oregon, Texas, and Ohio State, even though they're the eight. And we get word about Carson Beck. It doesn't look like he'd be ready for that second round game. If Notre Dame were to beat Indiana like they're supposed to, and it ends up being this guy Stockton, talking to some people that make numbers on this, they say if it's not Beck, that they would make Notre Dame a favorite against Georgia, a short favorite. And then, okay, let's say you get past there. Let's say you meet up with Penn State. It's James Franklin. He's 1-17 against top five teams. Notre Dame fans can talk themselves into this. So people have been betting them this week at 10-1.
Something to have public teams, Joe. Thank you, buddy. Great stuff as always.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I don't know about that, though. Marcus Freeman bump? I'm not sold. I'm not sold. I think he's done a good job this year, but I'm not sold. All right.
TBD.
Do the Bears seem overmatched in the Minnesota game on Monday night despite playing them close the last time? Do you feel Minnesota is on a roll after a 5-TD outing from quarterback Sam Darnold last week? How will the Bears stop him on Monday, and what does the future hold for Darnold? Any chance Minnesota gives him the franchise tag?
Lots of questions here, good ones, and start with the first one, the obvious one. Yeah, they're overmatched. This is not going to be a good 3-hour commercial on national television for the Bears organization. This is going to be a slog, a long night watching the Bears be dominated again in a building that has not been good to them and is not getting any easier to play in. And you're going to see the difference between a team that's preparing for the Super Bowl as evidence of their padded practice this week when they're 11-2. And a team that's announcing walkthrough Wednesdays because they just want to play out the string. That's going to be a difference in disparity. It's going to be glaringly obvious Monday night on whatever station you watch, ABC, Disney, ESPN. Monday Night Football.
Yeah, watch it on Disney. Watch the SpongeBob.
Are they doing another
Simpsons episode?
The reason I said that, though, if you want to know why I said what I said, is because it's a little confusing this week because we have two games.
I get it.
So two games will be on at once.
I'm not. That wasn't a shot at you, believe it or not. I'm not doing that. I think that wasn't.
Clearly a shot at Doug.
Back to Sam Darnold. I think that the franchise value for quarterbacks, franchise tag value this year is $38 million. And it may seem exorbitant, but he's likely to get that in the open market. If somebody's going to offer him three-year 100. He's having an MVP caliber season. He's going to be the comeback player of the year. I would think that it's a no-brainer. He's a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback right now. In that system with that coach and play caller, he's only going to get better. Yeah, I think the Vikings, you don't know what you have in J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
We like the guy. But they bring him back, franchise tag, Vikings going to be a problem again next year.
I don't think it'll be as bad as it was Sunday afternoon in San Francisco, but I don't think it's going to be very good. The defense has to respond. It really does. The defense has to be better just on a personal level. Guys got to want to make contact. You know, guys can't be making, as we've, you know, the one of the hot words seems like, you know, guys making business decisions. Okay. Make a business decision to put, you know, your reputation on the line. Make some contact. There are three very good pass catchers, okay, on this Vikings team. And their running back came from Green Bay to Minnesota, and he basically has owned the Bears the whole time he's been in the NFC North. So the run defense has been no damn good. The pass defense, which used to be good, was not good last week. Sam Darnold, I think, you know, is it the play caller? Is it Sam Darnold? Is it the marriage? To be determined. I do not think Sam Darnold will be back in Minnesota next year, but I think Daniel Jones will stick around and try to help mentor the guy they took last year, local guy made good, J.J. McCarthy.
I think it's a fascinating idea because I think you're so right. I think to answer the first part of it, I think the Bears are going the wrong way, and I think Minnesota's going the right way. And they're coming off a really good performance where they got five touchdown passes from Sam Darnold, and they've got as good a receiving core as there is in the NFL. And they make plays, and the Bears are going through walkthrough Wednesdays. And that speaks differently as to how focused you are. And you're just trying to get through a season, and these guys are trying to get into the playoffs. So I think both organizations are heading in different fashions. Listen, the Kevin O'Connell's reputation has grown immensely. He's still in the running for a coach of the year himself.
Definitely.
And what he's done with the quarterback has been extraordinary. The problem with J.J. McCarthy is you don't know what his injuries are. He did have to have a second procedure, maybe just a cleanup, but he not only got his knee done, he had to have another type of surgery. That scares me a little bit. I wonder if it scares them. I think they feel like Kevin McCarthy is the key here and that he can get – he can do things with J.J., and J.J. McCarthy is a really good player. So even if it's his rookie year or his first year, he can do very well with Kevin McCarthy. I just don't know. I don't know if they want to give $40 million or get right to a guy on his rookie contract and kind of build up around it, etc. I don't think Daniel Jones is sticking around there, Dustin.
No.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I think you wonder if they have such confidence in Kevin O'Connell. They think that basically he can make the best out of any quarterback.
That's
even an untested guy like J.J. McCarthy. But that's really risky in the NFL, as you know.
Yes.
You take the sure thing, and right now Sam Darnold is closer to a sure thing.
$40 million is a lot of money for Sam Darnold for 1 year.
Depends on how the season ends.
Yeah,
and where it ends.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If they make a nice playoff run and they feel like it's out there in front of them,
and they're this close,
then they could do it. Yeah.
Imagine losing your star quarterback, your best edge rusher, and getting better.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's what the Vikings did this year.
It's crazy.